Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha.
Shri yadu ruvacha notsahejarasas tatum antara praptaya chaktava aviditva sukham gramyam. Achieved old age, although you also were a young man. But I do not welcome your old age and invalidity, for unless one enjoys material happiness, one cannot attain renunciation. Purport. Renunciation of material enjoyment is the ultimate goal of human life. Therefore, the Varnashram system is most scientific. It aims at giving one the facility to return home back to Godhead, which one cannot do without completely renouncing all connections with the material world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Nishkinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajanon Mukhasya. One who wants to go back to Godhead, must be Nishkinchan, free from all affinity for material enjoyment. Brahmanyu Pashuma Ashrayam. Unless one is fully renounced, one cannot engage in devotional service or stay in Brahman. Devotional service is rendered on the Brahman platform. Therefore, unless one attains the Brahman platform or spiritual platform, one cannot engage in devotional service. Or in other words, a person engaged in devotional service is already on the Brahman platform. Maṁ cayo vyabhicārena bhakti yogena sevate sagunān samatityaitān brahma bhūyāya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. If one attains devotional service, therefore, he is certainly liberated. Generally, unless one enjoys material happiness, one cannot attain renunciation. Varnashram therefore gives the opportunity for gradual elevation. Yadu, the son of Maharaj Yayati, explained that he was unable to give up his youth, for he wanted to use it to attain the renounced order in the future. Maharaj Yadu was different from his brothers. As stated in the next verse, Turvasushchodita pitra druhyushchanushcha bharata pratyachakyur adharmagya. Maharaj Yadu's brothers refused to accept their father's proposal because they were not completely aware of dharma. To accept orders that follow religious principles, especially the orders of one's father, is very important. Therefore, when the brothers of Maharaj Yadu refused their father's order, this was certainly irreligious. Maharaj Yadu's refusal, however, was religious. As stated in the 10th canto, Yadoscha Dharma Shilasya, Maharaj Yadu was completely aware of the principles of religion. The ultimate principle of religion is to engage oneself in devotional service to the Lord. Maharaj Yadu was very eager to engage himself in the Lord's service, but there was an impediment. During youth, the material desire to enjoy the material senses is certainly present, and unless one fully satisfies these lusty desires in youth, there is a chance of one's being disturbed in rendering service to the Lord. We have actually seen that many sannyasis who accept sannyas prematurely, not having satisfied their material desires, fall down because they are disturbed. Therefore, the general process is to go through grihastha life and vanaprastha life and finally come to sannyas and devote oneself completely to the service of the Lord. Maharaj Yadu was ready to accept his father's order and exchange youth for old age because he was confident that the youth taken by his father would be returned. But because this exchange would delay his complete engagement in devotional service, he did not want to accept his father's old age, for he was eager to achieve freedom from disturbances. Moreover, among the descendants of Yadu would be Lord Krishna. Therefore, because Yadu was eager to see the Lord's appearance in his dynasty as soon as possible, Yadu refused to accept his father's proposal. This was not irreligious, however, because Yadu's purpose was to serve the Lord. Because Yadu was a faithful servant of the Lord, Lord Krishna appeared in his dynasty. As confirmed in the prayers of Kunti, Yadu Priyasyan Vavaye, Yadu was very dear to Krishna, who was therefore eager to descend in Yadu's dynasty. In conclusion, Maharaj Yadu should not be considered adharmagya, ignorant of religious principles, as the next verse designates his brothers. He was like the four sanaks, chatusana, who refused the order of their father, Brahma, for for the sake of a better cause. Because the four Kumaras wanted to engage themselves completely in the service of the Lord as brahmacharis, their refusal to obey their father's order was not irreligious. Prabhupada begins his purport by stating that renunciation of material enjoyment is the ultimate goal of human life. In different places in Srila Prabhupada's writings, we'll find different ultimate goals of human life being given. Let's go. Sometimes we see it written that liberation is the ultimate goal of human life, or attainment of devotional service, satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, attainment of love of God. Different statements may be given as the ultimate goal of human life. Actually, they're not contradictory. When it's said that renunciation of material enjoyment is the ultimate goal of human life, the next sentence we see, therefore the Varnashram institution is most scientific. For those within the Varnashram system, the whole goal of following the Varnashram process is to become renounced. Even though there are statements in the Vedic literatures which apparently encourage material enjoyment, the ultimate idea is to bring people to the following of religious principles so that they may so-called enjoy material enjoyment according to regulated principles. And by continuing to hear scriptural injunctions, they can eventually come to realize that the scriptural injunctions which recommend renunciation, they're actually correct, because there is no enjoyment in material life. Manu states, pravrittis tu pravitting sarva bhutanam pravitting mahatam phalam, that pravritti mark, the path of enjoying the senses according to regulated principles, everyone is engaged in that, but the real goal, the real fruit, is to come to the nivritti mark, the path of renunciation. So that also, the path of renunciation, that means what? That means to become niskinchan, to have nothing in this world. But that is also meant to lead us to the stage of liberation, and beyond that, pure devotional service to Krishna. Because there cannot be pure devotional service to Krishna if we are attached to this material world. Prabhupada here quotes partially a verse stated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is quoted in the Chaitanya Chandradaya, a poem, a drama by Kavi Karnapa. Nishkinchanasya Bhagavan Bhajanon Mukhasya. One is inclined towards the devotional service of Krishna, he must be niskinchan. Niskinchanasya Bhagavan Bhajanon Mukhasya. Parang Param Jigamesha Bhavasagarasya. Who intends to cross over the ocean of material existence. Such a person, he can cross over the ocean of material existence. He can become Krishna conscious if he has no personal desire. And Prabhupada also quotes from Kunti's prayers. She also says that Krishna is akinchana gochara. He is the property of, Krishna is realized, Krishna is understandable by those who have no desire for material advancement, neither by being born in a high family. Janmaishvarya Shruti Shri. The four prominent material opulences are birth in a high family, wealth, learning, and bodily beauty. We see in the modern age there is much stress given on Aishvarya, money, and Shri, bodily beauty. These two especially are stressed. And education, materialistic education, Jara Vidya. People become very proud if they are MSc, PhD, all this kind of thing. But that also for the sake of prestige and for the sake of getting some so-called good job by which you can get money, Aishvarya. Then you can spend it in the beauty parlor, 5,000 rupees, to make your body beautiful. Men and women both, they're going to the beauty parlor to have their body made looking very beautiful. So these things are stressed very much. But Kunti Devi says that Krishna is understandable by those who have no material desires, who are finished with this material world. Now, Yadu here, He is the eldest son of Yayati. And his father is actually, it's not a very relishable proposition. His father is saying, here, take my old age. I'll be young and you'll be old. So the other younger sons of Yayati, the brothers of Yadu, said, forget it. You want to enjoy life. Yadu, he also said, forget it. I want to enjoy life. But with a different, completely different motivation. His idea was to serve Krishna. He understood that to serve Krishna, one must be free of material desires. But he considered that I have material desires. Material desires are very difficult to overcome. So unless I go through the Grihastha ashram and have some material enjoyment, then how can I become renounced? Then how can I become a pure devotee of Krishna? His only aim was to be a pure devotee of Krishna. But he recognized he had certain material desires which he had to deal with. What to do with these material desires. So he was confident that if he went through the Grihastha ashram, that he could come out the other side, renounced. In entering the Grihastha ashram, it's Grihastha ashram, that's meant. Ashram means a situation for spiritual advancement. So the Grihastha ashram is entered into with the aim of coming out the other side. Not that you are Grihastha. Stha means fixed. So you're just Grihastha. You're fixed there forever and ever. Until death us do part. In English it said that I accept this wife. I promise to look after her in good health or poor, in happiness or distress, in plenty or want, until death us do part. This is in the Christian marriage ritual. So if one is grihastha, simply fixed in the griha, that he has taken the griha to be all in all, that beyond this there is nothing more to be known. Once situated there, he experiences a bliss that he doesn't want to give up under any circumstances. So if he's... Actually, that's the description in Gita of the transcendentalist in samadhi. Once fixed, once he attains that, yang labha chaparang labham, he thinks that having attained this, he thinks there is nothing better to be gained. So this is the description of transcendental samadhi. So if one having entered Grihastha life thinks that this is so wonderful that there's nothing better than this, let me stay here forever, then he's actually called Grihamedi. That word is given, it means just like a bull tied to a post. Yes, it's like a practical demonstration as the class is going on of the bliss. As the Bhagavatam describes, Kapila Dev describes, the father hears the broken words and the crying of the children and thinks, how wonderful, how nice. To him it sounds very sweet, although to everyone else it sounds horrible. But to him it sounds very sweet. So this Grihastha ashram, Yadu was considering of entering with the idea of coming out the other side. That will enjoy for some time, according to regulated principles, and at the same time execute our religious duties, and most important of all, the Grihastha should go on hearing topics of renunciation, so that gradually he can come to realize, both by hearing and by practical experience, that this isn't very good, and having been fixed in renunciation, he goes on to become a vanaprastha, and then when he's fully fixed, to become a sannyasi, to become detached from all these things, and then he can fully fix his consciousness on Krishna. That's the whole idea. That's the esoteric reason for entering the Grihastha ashram. There are other reasons also that on the mundane platform it is required to have children. What is that? Putrate kriyate bharya. one should accept a wife for the sake of having a child, and then putra pinda prayojana, Manu also says, he's required to have a son so that he can offer oblations to the forefathers. And then one, otherwise one's duty, a person in this material world has various duties, debts, he's indebted, devarshi bhutartha nrinam, pitrinam, he's indebted to the demigods, the sages, devarshi bhuta, to other living beings, to other members of society, and to the pitris. So to satisfy the pitris, it is necessary to have a son who will offer, who will continue to offer this oblations to the forefathers. That means one time going to Gaya, he will offer pinda. And also, he will annually perform the Shraddha ceremony for his father, by which the father can be delivered from a hellish condition. And daily he will perform a sacrifice. In the home of a grihastha, it is required that he daily perform a sacrifice. Therefore, the fire is considered, the sacred fire is always burning in the home of a Vedic Brahmana. In your home, they have a fire burning constantly? No. No one's. Few people are doing. They have a fire burn, and that fire they'll every day take for making the sacrifice. That's why sannyasi is described in Gita. Krishna says, he gives the example that a real sannyasi, who is a real sannyasi? Who knows that verse? First verse of the sixth chapter. Anashrita karma phalang karyang karma karotiya sasannyasi cha yogi cha nani ragnya na chakriya. Krishna gives the definition of a true sannyasi as one who performs his duty as he's obliged to do without being attached to the results. Not nanyaragnya na chakriya, not one who gives up activities or who gives up all connection with fire. A sannyasi is supposed to have no connection with fire. That means he doesn't cook for himself. And he also doesn't perform the daily sacrifice which a grihastha is supposed to perform every day. According to Vedic Karma Kanda, he's supposed to. So he becomes. The idea is that sannyasi has given these up. So grihastha means who hasn't given these up. He performs daily sacrifice and he performs so many different activities in the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. It's described in detail all the different activities a grihastha must do according to his. Not only according to his ashram, but according to his varna. The first portion of the day is used for dharma, the second for artha, another part is used for kam. The day is divided, which part of the day he must use for certain activities. Very structured way of life. So, grihastha, he has contact with fire. He's performing sacrifices to satisfy the one of the, there are different yagyas. Deva yagya, rishi. There are different kinds of yagyas. The rishis, they are satisfied by the yagya of studying the shastra. That's also one kind of yagya. So in different ways, different debts that we all have. We're indebted to the demigods because they give us light, heat, water, all the things that we require. Rishis, we're indebted to them because they give us knowledge. So one has to discharge these debts by performing different yagyas. So the grihastha, he has to perform. He has to have a son. He has to have a son. That is his duty to perpetuate his dynasty. There's the story. Who was that? That was it. Agastya Muni came across the Vailakhyas, the little sages. They were hanging upside down, thumb-sized sages. They were all hanging upside down from a tree. And why is this? Because we haven't discharged our duty to have sons. We didn't get married. And this is some stories you'll find in Shastra, that how important it is to be married and have sons. You'll find many descriptions in the Shastra where it says Grihastha Ashram is the best ashram. Of course, Prabhupada, we don't find this in Bhagavata, just the opposite. And Prabhupada preached quite differently. Prabhupada was practically pushing everyone to renunciate. He gave sannyas to boys, practically. Jagatak Maharaj, I think, was 21 years old. There was so many. Achyutananda, how old was he? It took something like that also. Adi Keshav, was just a kid. He was 20 years old. Prabhupada gave him sannyas. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also, there's one story how some article came in the newspaper, how it was obviously attacking Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, because his policy was to give sannyas to even to brahmachari, to young men. You'll see so many of Saraswati Thakur's sannyas. They're also young, maybe 30 years old when they took sannyas. So this was attacking. He said, no, you should go through all the different stages, then you can take sannyas. Saraswati Thakur said, no, rather they should take sannyas from brahmachari. Why should they get entangled in all these things? So Prabhupada is very much in that mood of pushing renunciation. And, even Grihastas, I was just reading one letter from Prabhupada yesterday. He's writing to a Grihastha couple that, why should you get entangled in all? Alright, you're married, but you dedicate your life to preaching. Go back to God. Don't get entangled in so many things. So Prabhupada is very much pushing renunciation. Suresh doesn't like this. He's not impressed. Suresh, he doesn't like this discussion. He's not impressed. Doesn't appeal to him very much. So he's very much pushing this, that why get entangled? Why again through that? Why again go through that? If you can immediately become Krishna conscious, why not? Why get entangled all these things? Because generally we see here Yadu Maharaj, he was saying, I'll be a Grihastha and go through all these things, but practically in the modern society, that the support, without the support of the Varnashram system, we see that practically most Grihasthas, at least many of them, it's very difficult for them not to be entangled in so many ways, in social life, and even their children, they try to bring them up Krishna conscious, but in many cases they're not interested, or half interested, or quarter interested. Even once I remember I entered the home without, he didn't know I was coming. I entered the home of a Grihastha devotee. This is in a town where there's no ISKCON. Now there's an ISKCON center, but at that time there wasn't. So he was, this is in the evening, and he was chanting his rounds, but also watching TV at the same time. So of course that's one reason why we build temples, so that Grihastha devotees, they can come, and their social needs are, if there are many Grihasthas, they can come and their social needs are fulfilled also, that they can meet friends and chat and how are you and this and that, and do things together. People like to do things. Man is a social animal, so they like to do things together, so they can come to the temple and do things together, organize prasadam or organize some festival. This way, this can save devotees from fall down. But practically we see that it's without that kind of support of the Varnashram system or the temple community, that many times Grihastha devotees, they don't become more renounced, they become more entangled. So Prabhupada, he was pushing both sides. You'll see both instructions. On one side he'd encourage Grihasthas be married and have children and this and that. On the other side, he was pushing the mode of renunciation. Both things are there. Different instructions are required for different people, but definitely the Vaishnava acharyas, they will generally, that pushing is there. That's why acharya is required, to push you towards advancement, because our tendency is to get stuck in the mud. The tendency is to get stuck. So there's also some kind of philosophy going around these days that you make a guru by the book only. You just read the book, and that way you have a guru. But Prabhupada was asked about this directly. He said that, can you contact the guru just by reading his book? Prabhupada said, yes, by the book also, but directly you have to have a guru also. Not that you just imagine some guru out of the air. Another time Prabhupada was asked, why Prabhupada stresses that the person Bhagavat is more important than the book Bhagavat? So Prabhupada replied that because he can pull your ear. So that is also required, pushing. Otherwise you may read the book and think, All right, this is a nice story. We're reading about Yayati and very instructive story. That's all right, that's nice. Now we're almost on the 10th canto. Let's rush through it quick and get to the Ras Lila. Let's never mind about all these stories. But the Acharya will give us instruction as we require. We see practically Prabhupada was always pushing on these points. Renunciation, preaching, pushing on the Krishna consciousness movement, controlling the mind and senses. There are so many subjects in the Vedic literature. Even within the Vaishnava literature, there are so many points. But what was Prabhupada stressing on? He was giving Krishna consciousness the instruction as we need to hear it. Maybe not as we like to hear it. We may like, let us hear some nice stories of... So that's also there. But Prabhupada, there's also a story. This story we don't hear quoted so much. How we'll find so many stories of this also in this canto. There's this story of Urvashi. Who was Urvashi with? What was the name of her husband? Puruvara. So how Puruvara became as enchanted by Urvashi. And he became, in his own words, just as intelligent as a goat by enjoying sex life. So there's also stories from Bhagavad Gita. But we don't hear that in the big katas. They'll tell so many stories and everyone will go, ah, ooh, how nice. But this kind of story, they won't be telling. It's not sweet, you can say. Krishna consciousness, there are different tastes, sweet and salty and sour. They're all required. It's all required. And according to one's disposition, according to one's the condition, different kind of food is required. According to your health, they will prescribe. You should eat more of this food and not much of that food. I've been told in my own condition, I'm supposed to be more of vata and pitta. Vayu and pitta mixed. So, too much. More salt is good for me, and sour is not good. So, according to different people, some more sweet is good for you, more salt. For you, Jayavitaka Maharaj was telling me he was told he should take the diet of very little oil or ghee and lots of spices. So, different according to the condition of your body, a different kind of food is required. Even though you may like, let me eat more sweet. If you have diabetes, it's not good at all. Or, according to your condition, you may take little sweet, more salt, more salt, like this. So Prabhupada was giving this Krishna consciousness as we need to hear it. We don't find that Prabhupada was repeatedly stressing how we have to attain Radha Krishna Prem. In fact, I don't think you'll find anywhere in Prabhupada's books he even refers to Radha Krishna Prem, even once. I don't remember. He speaks of love of Krishna, but more he speaks about attaining pure devotional service, being free from all material desires. We find the Babajis and the Sahajiyas, they stress on how the goal of life is to attain Radha Krishna Prem, but it's not different what Prabhupada is saying, but just see the emphasis. The idea that I will attain Radha Krishna Prem, I will be dancing with Krishna, with Radha and Krishna. So it's almost a concept of I will be enjoying there. But how much Prabhupada stressed, yasya prasadat bhagavat prasada, yasya aprasada nagati katopi. You can't jump up into those conjugal pastimes. You first deserve, then desire. When a group of Prabhupada's disciples started reading exclusively sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita describing the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna, Prabhupada was very angry. He said, first deserve, then desire. You're not fit for that. They said, well, Prabhupada, we're only reading your books. He said, it's not all meant for you. You see, Prabhupada, He never spoke about these things in his classes. Bhagavad Gita he spoke. These topics he spoke again and again and again. So just see what is fit for you. What is fit to preach to others. Nowadays we have so many people saying that, well, Prabhupada said this, but actually he meant something else. Now we have to tell the things, the secret things which Prabhupada didn't reveal. There may be so many secret things which Prabhupada didn't reveal, but are you fit to understand it? That we have to see. Here, this is much more important discussion. Very important discussion. How to overcome material desires. It's very important in everyone's life. Everyone should consider. Are you going to be brahmachari? Stay brahmachari. Get married. If you're going to get married, you have to go in with the idea of coming out the other side after properly discharging your family duties. How are you going to do that? It's very important discussion. Unless people are properly situated, it's very difficult for them to advance in Krishna consciousness. If their mind is excessively disturbed, then they're not fit for the brahmachari ashram. And then they should go to another ashram. Then they have to execute their duties in there properly. It's not that simply, not whimsically. Go in, stay in for some time, do what you have to do properly, and come out the other side. Then sannyas, how the sannyas ashram should be followed. All this very important discussion. Otherwise, to go up, up, so high discussion, but there's no solid foundation, then you'll simply fall and break your neck. So these things are required. Prabhupada was very much stressing on the preaching mission. In fact, in one purport in the fourth canto, he writes that although we're hearing so much these days about Radha Krishna praying, although, as I say, I never heard this Prabhupada mention this term even once. Prabhupada writes that the topmost position for a Vaishnava is preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world. He doesn't say to hide in a bush in Vrindavan and hope that Radha and Krishna will come along. He never said that. The topmost position for a Vaishnava is preaching Krishna consciousness. Because that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. He is Radha Krishna. He is relishing. He is relishing the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the form of Radharani relishing Krishna, but he came to preach Krishna consciousness. That was his mood. And the mood of his servants is preaching Krishna consciousness, not trying to enjoy. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is enjoying. He is Radharani. He is enjoying. It's not for us to enjoy. It's not. He is enjoying that. So our duty is to serve him. How to serve him? Jare dekho tare kaho Krishna upadesh amar angai guru hoya tara idesh. Preaching Krishna consciousness everywhere, in becoming a guru, that means becoming fixed and giving Krishna consciousness to others. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? No question. You have a question.
Should not be accepted in Kali Yuga. And of the just think that he is sannyasi for the people.
So you always speak the word sannyas?
We always say that this word is a person in sannyasi.
No, actually that's a quote from Brahma Vaivarta Purana, just technically. You don't know the answer to this question? You never asked this question before? Never had it clear? This is explained in Prabhupada's purports. I believe, quoting from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted, this is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said this, but then shortly after that, he himself, acting as an acharya, accepted sannyas. So, in cases where there is apparent contradiction, we have to see what is the proper understanding? That karma sannyas, the acceptance of sannyas on the karma kanda platform, that is forbidden in Kali Yuga, but sannyas as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted for the sake of pleasing Krishna, that should be accepted. Not that it can be, but should be. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas in the mood of the Avanti Brahmana, who, that verse we can find in Bhagavatam, that verse is stating the mood of a Vaishnava sannyasi. Etansa astaya paratmanishtam adhyasitam purvatamai mahadvi aham tarishami durantaparam tamomukundangri nishevayaiva. He said that I am determined to cross over the ocean of material existence by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, as so many great personalities previously in the past did. So the sannyas within the varnashram system, that kind of sannyas, where one simply nani ragne na chakriyaha, giving up, simply to give up connection with fire and to give up one's prescribed duties as a grihastha, that kind of sannyas, anyway there is no varnashram system, so that kind of sannyas is not recommended. But the real sannyas, which is for surrender to Krishna, that is the very, as stated here, that is the very goal of life. So that sannyas, this statement from Brahma Vaivarta Purana cannot override the more important statement that real sannyas should always be accepted. It's always recommendable. So that statement is understood within parameters. Just like we'll find in the Vedic, just like I was saying, in the Vedic literatures we'll find apparently contradictory statements. Grihastha ashram is the best ashram, you'll find. And then again we find sannyasa ashram is the best ashram. So apparently contradictory. So within a certain parameter it may be said, this is correct. We'll find in Bhishma Dev's long instructions, we'll find in Mahabharata. And in one place he says, this is the best religious activity. Giving charity is the best religious activity, and performing one's prescribed duties is the best. This is the best. And then which kinds of charity? Giving this in charity is the best. Giving cows in charity is the best. Giving knowledge is the best. Giving food is the best. Indifferent. So there are so many things said which are the best. But all these things have to be balanced. The gift of food is very much recommended. But then again in Gita we see that if that food is not offered to Krishna, then you're just distributing sin. And who should that food be given to? It should be given to properly qualified brahmanas. So there are so many apparently contradictory things. That's why acharyas are required to synthesize these apparent contradictions and give the actual conclusion. Otherwise, by reading books alone, you may become confused, as in this case. You had a question?
No, I was in class sometimes, because Brahmachari in the temple, they're all living together, and it's like sometimes what if they become tired because they have no place to sleep.
No place to sleep?
Some baggage are killed.
Some what?
No, so many disturbances. Different kind.
Yes, that's why I didn't come here last night.
Well, sometimes the devotees are like, I saw in Russia, in India it's not common, but in Russia at least, the ratings of cows, they are continuing to be brahmachari, they have to have blind balance or something.
Yeah, that's called Babu Brahmachari.
Yeah. No, I just want to ask them what to do. From one sense, it's like, if you want to continue to be Brahmachari, they have to save you from so many disturbances.
This is This is a time, place, circumstance question, which doesn't really fit with the Bhagavatam. This is the details of how to live in this material world, which it's not Bhagavatam discussion. These rules are not feasible now. Well, in one place Prabhupada says that these sanskars are not, it's not possible to do them as previously, therefore chanting Hare Krishna should be done. Prabhupada gave some alternative for Garbhadhan sanskar, that before attempting to produce a child, grihasthas, both husband and wife, should chant at least 50 rounds of the Maha Mantra. So it's not that these things should, everything should be just thrown out. As much as possible, if these things are done, they're good. Otherwise, it's just animal, isn't it? Without rules and regulations, then it's simply animal life. Yashastra vidhimutsrija vartate kama karataha nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukam na param gati. You know this verse? Rupa Goswami, you're shaking your head. You know this verse? You know it? What does it mean? Those who don't follow the rules and regulations of scripture and act simply according to their own desires, they cannot attain perfection or happiness or the supreme destination. That's why the rules and regulations of Shastra are there. Not simply to bring us to some moral platform, but to guide us to the param gati, to the supreme destination. It's more than Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Kaya Kaya. What is that? Kaya Kaya. Gyadva Shastra Vidhanam Tam Kayam Kartamiharasi. Therefore, one should, in the next verse, Krishna says that Kaya Kaya Vivastito, one should therefore follow the rules and regulations. You should know what they are, you should follow them. Is there a point upon attaining which one will never slide down again? Yes, when one attains to pure devotional service, then yang labham chaparam labham. When you attain that position, then why should you want to come down? Still the possibility is there, because as jivas, we are marginal. The nature of the jiva is tatastha. He's marginal. He can go this way or that way. So theoretically the possibility is there. Well, it's got absolutely nothing to do with the class, but you can look in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 13th chapter, there is one verse which says that Purusha Sukha Dukhanam Bhutritve Hetu Ruchate. You can look that up and you'll get your answer. Nothing happens by chance. Remember that? Purusha Sukha Dukhanam. That's 13th chapter. Who knows what this means? The individual living being is the cause of his own happiness and distress, and is the cause of his own happiness and distress in this material world. So it may appear just like some nice little girl, never did any harm to anybody, is run over by a car and killed. Why? What's the reason? Any idea? because in a previous life that person caused suffering to others, therefore has to suffer now. So there's always a reason. Nothing happens by chance. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.